This is DW News live from Berlin tonight. High drama on the pitch as Germany advances in the Euro 2020. The match against Hungary ending in a draw, a 2-2 tie. No winner, but Germany enters the next round. Also coming up, another push to bring peace to violence-ridden Libya. International leaders gathered in Berlin for fresh talks to support achieving stability in the war-torn country. Elections in Libya are set for the end of the year if the violence doesn't get in the way. And the printing presses and digital networks at Hong Kong's largest pro-democracy news source are closing down for the last time. After 26 years, the Apple Daily is stopping operations to protect staff from China's new national security law. I'm Brent Koff. It's good to have you with us. We begin with European football, Euro 2020, and Group F. It was labeled as the group of death this evening. It was the group of heartbreak, with fortunes constantly swinging back and forth. Germany was on the verge of elimination, trailing twice against Hungary, but in the end saved themselves thanks to a Goretzka goal in the 84th minute. The 2-2 draw sees Germany through to the knockout round. In the other game between title holders Portugal and world champions France, similar drama and the same result, 2-2 at the end. The hero here, Cristiano Ronaldo, who scored twice to spare Portugal the fate of going home early. To Euro 2020 in Group F, it was labeled as the group of death. We just said that. So let's now see if we can go over to Oliver Moody. He is here at the big table with me. Oliver, what happened in this game? I mean, we were waiting for something to happen with Germany to find its passion, but that came rather late.
It did come, well, very late. This was very nearly another big tournament catastrophe for Germany. I mean, we all remember the shambles that was the 2018 World Cup, how heartbroken all the German fans were, and how long it's taken for German football to start finding itself again. And we were very almost sent back to square one on that front. You know, to go behind one time to Hungary was perhaps forgivable. You know, crazy things happen in football.
Sure.
To go behind twice was very careless indeed, especially the nature of the goal they conceded. Look, Germany are through, and ultimately with the group stage of major tournaments, that is what counts, staying alive in the tournament. But okay, they're going to have to do a hell of a lot better
than
this.
They're going to have to do better. So, I mean, what do they need to do to improve?
Well, for one thing, they cannot concede goals the likes of which they conceded in this game. I mean, Adam Szolai, who scored the opening goal for Hungary in this game, a very experienced striker, but not the quickest guy. And Mats Hummels just completely lost him. Matthias Ginter as well playing him onside. It was not well organised at the back for Germany. They need to tighten up from that front. And the second goal that they conceded basically came right after Germany had equalised, and they clearly just weren't switched on properly. Mm-hmm. Again, poor organisation at the back. They have to do better, but also an attack. Against Portugal, there was this lightness about Germany's attack.
Yeah.
You could see what they were trying to do with hitting Robin Gosens in particular on the wings. Today, I just couldn't see what it was Germany were really trying to do in attack.
And it should have been a fairly easy win for Germany tonight.
Look, on paper, Germany are a much better side than Hungary. We do have to give some credit to Hungary here, though. They got a draw out of France as well. Mm. And they made Portugal sweat right up until the last quarter of the game at 0-0. So this is not, you know, a useless team that couldn't do anything. But taking them out of Budapest, where they played their first two games in front of a packed house with, you know, screaming fans, taking them to Munich, I thought maybe a bit of the passion that the Hungary players had shown so far wouldn't be on show tonight. But in fact, they kept up their performance, and it was Germany who let theirs slide.
Yeah, I mean, this sets up a round of 16 against England. Your thoughts on that clash?
I have a lot of thoughts on that, Brent. Yeah. England are a team that also haven't really impressed at this tournament so far, but they're a team that has been very solid. They haven't yet conceded a goal in three matches at Euro 2020. Germany, on the other hand, have conceded five. So clearly there's a difference there. If Germany have something to look to get some hope for this contest, it would be England's attack, which has been misfiring so far, just the two goals that England have scored. So Germany will be hoping that perhaps their problems in defence and England's problems with scoring goals perhaps level themselves out And that might be Germany's way through. But they certainly, for me, have to pick up their performance after this.
If they could just tap into your energy, Oliver, they would definitely win.
Hey, I'm available if they've decided against Flick after all.
All right. Oliver Moody, as always, Oliver, thank you very much. All right, in the last match in Group E today, Spain racked up the biggest win at the tournament so far against Slovakia. Aymeric Laporte scored his first international goal as Spain hit 5 without reply to claim 3 crucial points and qualify from the group. In the other game, Sweden won an exciting match against Poland in stoppage time. The 3-2 victory puts them through to the knockout stages with an unbeaten record. All right, in other news now, international leaders have held talks here in Berlin aimed at securing a lasting peace deal in Libya. The country has been unstable since 2011 when a NATO-backed uprising toppled longtime dictator Muammar Gaddafi. Leaders discussed the withdrawal of foreign fighters and upcoming elections scheduled for December. It's hoped the vote will finally bring some stability and some unity to the country.
It got off to a confusing start. America's top diplomat meets his German counterpart in Berlin. Despite the awkward welcome, both men said they share the same vision for Libya.
We share the goal of a sovereign, stable, unified, secure Libya, free from foreign interference. It's what the people of Libya deserve. It's critical to regional security as well.
At the table, the permanent members of the UN Security Council, together with other regional powers. And for the first time, representatives from Libya's transitional government. One of the main goals, ensuring elections planned for December go ahead.
We are supporting the election because this is the you know, the way for democracy in Libya and building legitimate government. However, we understand there is a lot of security challenges in the ground.
One of those challenges is the presence of thousands of foreign troops and mercenaries inside Libya.
We will not let up and will not rest until the last foreign troops have left Libya. That is why we have gathered here for a second time at the Libya conference. And that is what we will work towards.
Libya has been in crisis ever since the ouster of Muammar Gaddafi in 2011. Following his fall, armed groups refused to disband, and regional rivalries grew. Elections failed to bring the country any closer. Rival governments were set up in the western and eastern parts of the country. In Tripoli, a government recognised by many Western nations, while another regime established itself in Tobruk. In October 2020, the warring sides agreed to a ceasefire. They then formed a transitional government. The elections this December will finally give the Libyan people a say. Some fear it may only be a small step on the long road to lasting peace.
And for more now, I'm joined by Anas El-Ghamati. He is in Rome tonight. He's the founder of the SADC Institute, which is an independent think tank based in Tripoli. It's good to see you again. I want to ask you, even if these talks are successful, can we say that Libya, by the end of the year, that Libya is going to be ready for democracy?
It's a really great question. I think there's a danger in assuming that elections on their own will lead to a democracy in Libya. If the state-building process that we began in January of last year in Berlin is incomplete, and the state-building process is partially complete at the political level, so they've unified these two disparate halves, and they now have a unity government. But the military level and the economic level to some degree, but really the military level, is not only not unified, but it's not subservient yet. So the possibility of having elections and having them successfully is not that difficult. Dipping fingers in ink is not the hardest thing in the world. But having a democratic election that allows for a new parliament to be respected by two disparate militaries, and particularly actors like Khalifa Haftar, who doesn't want to be brought to subservience and brought to heel, that's going to be a major question. If your military doesn't want to be subservient to an appointed unity government or an elected new government, then it's a very, very dangerous thing to call for elections before that state-building process is complete.
Well, Mr. Haftar, for example, would not be as strong as he is if he didn't have support from outside of Libya. Are we at a point now where we can get countries such as Egypt, the UAE, the US, France, countries like these, to stop interfering in the domestic politics of Libya?
Another good question. We were asking this question ourselves last year, and I think the danger is we haven't made as much progress as we'd like to think. Now, we have got a ceasefire agreement that was signed in October 2020 that mandated the withdrawal of those foreign mercenaries within 90 days. The biggest challenge since the last Berlin conference has been that the two countries that have delivered those discreetly, Russia and the UAE, have refused to acknowledge their presence there. They, in fact, claim that they have no involvement in Libya's civil war and have had no involvement over the last several years, despite the fact that the UN panel of expert reports have gone into great detail about what they've done. If we're unwilling to call Russian mercenaries and Emirati mercenaries by their name and to push at the international level to at least acknowledge that they're there, then it's going to be very difficult to make them come good when it requires sequencing and meat on the bones. We don't need promises anymore. We need tangible outcomes and dates. Now, there is a date for the elections, 24th of December. There are only promises and gentlemen's agreements by those that don't even acknowledge that they have gentlemen on the ground, Russian mercenaries, thousands and thousands upon them in the east of the country, in the center of the country. They've not even been publicly acknowledged. Turkey does acknowledge that it has those mercenaries. I think they'll bring them out, but it may want to keep in some of those military officers, and I don't think it wants to be equivocated with, again, Russian and Emirati mercenaries. So it's going to be very, very difficult to see any progress made if we're even unwilling to call them by their own name.
Anas El-Ghamati from the Sadek Institute. Anas, as always, we appreciate your time and your insights. We'll be following this story and seeing how these talks develop. Thank you. Now, here's a look at some of the other stories that are making headlines around the world. Relatives have been waiting for information about loved ones following an explosion in Ethiopia's conflict-hit Tigray region. Witnesses say dozens of people were killed or wounded on Tuesday in an airstrike on a market in the town of Tugoga. Health workers say that soldiers blocked medical teams from traveling to the scene. Nine Catalan separatist leaders walked free from prison on Wednesday, vowing to win independence from Spain. Their release came a day after the seven men and two women were pardoned for their role in staging a banned referendum on secession from Madrid. The Spanish government said the measure was a necessary step towards national healing. The UN is warning that tens of thousands of people in Madagascar are on the brink of starvation. The World Food Program says acute malnutrition has almost doubled over the last 4 months as the south of the island faces its worst drought in 40 years. After 26 years in operation, Hong Kong's popular pro-democracy newspaper, The Apple Daily, has printed its final edition. Staff say the paper has been forced to close since Beijing enacted a sweeping national security law, arresting journalists and pro-democracy activists. The move could have chilling consequences for the future of free speech in Hong Kong.
It's been a popular paper in Hong Kong, mixing racy gossip with pro-democracy politics and criticism of China. But recently, Apple Daily had only been making it to the newsstands under increasing pressure from the authorities. Last year, police raided the paper's newsroom and arrested owner Jimmy Lai on suspicion of colluding with foreign forces. Further raids and sweeping new national security laws have now forced the paper to close. Five of its other executives were detained last week, and police have also frozen the company's assets, effectively choking its operations and silencing it. The paper's closure immediately brought people out onto the streets in support, while journalists warned of the chilling effect Apple Daily's shutdown would have on press freedom. We'll be very worried that there are consequences for writing an article. I'm afraid that it will make society feel, or how I feel now, that people can be put in prison because of what they write. It leads to a huge worry for the city's freedom of speech. As the presses rolled for the last time, printing as many as 1 million copies before the paper and its website shut down, those fears are likely to become a reality. These protesters, though, were keen to get the last copies, as another part of their press freedom fell silent.
Well, you're watching DW News. Janelle is up next with DW Business. Stick around, she will be right back.